podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Been left to Chris Wyatt, and how well he did that again. Scott Quinnell, a bust by Scott Gibbs. Scott Gibbs is through. Scott Gibbs has scored. What an amazing...
Welcome to the Attacking Scrum podcast. This is take two, would you believe, because after last week's sound debacle, where I managed to make it sound like we were recording from a giant packet of skips, a full investigation has taken place, and it was indeed entirely my fault. So apologies to Dan for casting aspersions there. Lots of measures have gone in to try and make sure that doesn't happen this week. And Murph and Dan are here with me once again to talk about rugby. How are we, boys? How are you, Dan?
I'm good, Jed. You are forgiven.
It's a good job you are the forgiving kind, actually. So, yeah, I do appreciate that. And how are you, Murph?
Good, thanks, yeah. I'm looking forward to more shenanigans now with the sound. It's already gone well.
I know. We've already had one false start. I thought it'd be a good idea to use this. So I'm recording my audio on an app that you have to press a button to record your voice. So it should drown out any unnecessary background noise. Problem is, I've got to remember to do that the whole time. So I can guarantee there'll be a chunk where I completely forget. But
no, and also, don't you have to edit it in later?
It should hopefully be all right. But anyway, we'll see. I've got the backup audio of this.
Yeah.
In theory.
Okay, Giles Martin, let's go.
George Martin.
Giles. Giles is Senu, who redoes all the you know, the 50-year anniversary releases.
Which is amazing, by the way. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I had him on my mind because I was listening to him on a podcast recently. And he said, I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but on the back of remastering all the Beatles LPs, they asked him to do one of the Rolling Stones albums. And when he got the drum track, for I think it was Goat's Head Soup, maybe one of those, there was nothing on it. And then when he looked at it after, he realized it was recorded in Jamaica. So it was just all to cock, everything. Like the drum track was empty, and then the drums were on with the guitars all on the same tape, stuff like that. So they got nothing on us.
We definitely need a side podcast, don't we, where we talk about music and cycling. Well, actually, no, this is the cycling podcast, isn't it? We need a side one where we talk about music and rugby. Yeah. But I'm so disappointed. I was hoping that you'd got a name wrong in the first 2 minutes, and it was the bloody Beatles producer.
Yeah, well, they kind of both are the same person. I wondered it the first time around, and now his son's doing the remastering jobs where they can split up all the stuff, because they only had four tracks, obviously, back in the day.
Dan, anything further to add on this point, or should we, should we dive into a bit of rugby?
What do you think of Let It Be?
Let It Be. Yeah, I'm gone.
Gone. Well, again, you're a big music fan yourself, though, Dan. So yeah, who knows? Maybe at some point we'll can the charade of talking about rugby at all. But we probably should have a little stab at talking about rugby. Where do you want to start, fellas? We've got some questions about the Lions. We have got some Wales internationals in the diary to look forward to, and we've also, of course, got the never ending Welsh derbies. Which, like every week, it just seems to be like this season's going to go on forever. It's like something out of Mad Max. It's like week 58, the 300th game of the season or the 300th Welsh derby of the seasons. Where do you want to start, Dan? You choose. We've started by talking about music. You choose where we want to go next.
Should we hit the derbies first and sort of get them out of the way?
I was just going to say that they were actually quite good. They weren't terrible, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's better.
Although nobody cares and probably no one was watching. The actual games themselves weren't awful, whereas generally speaking, derbies, they kind of cancel each other out or whatever, and they end up low scoring, kind of tight games. But they've actually been, I know it's late May, even on hard pitches, but they've actually been entertaining games. So they are actually worth talking about, really.
Maybe because there's been so many of them that now they're starting to get all right, you know, get watchable.
Yeah, yeah.
I think as well, though, it's like the teams have been mix and match the whole time. So this weekend was perhaps the best two fixtures in terms of fairly even match sides. And yeah, I thought both games were good, actually. Let's start with, should we start in chronological order? So we'll talk about Scarlett's Cardiff Blues. It was good just to see a game go down to the wire, actually, even though Cardiff made hard work of it. What was your assessment, Dan?
Yeah, it was an enjoyable game, wasn't it? I thought, some good running rugby on display. Some good performances pretty much from players on both, on both sides. Obviously, Cardiff Blues started well, didn't they? And, built quite a nice lead. I thought that Jared was putting the strings quite nicely, to be fair to him. Lovely passing, wasn't he? Putting players into holes. And Ben Thomas, I like the look of him as well. He's seems to have filled out, doesn't he? Certainly in the leg department.
I think Tom Shanklin mentioned this, didn't he, in commentary, that it's great having, a 10 playing 12, because it does give you a footballing option, but you've got to do the physical work as well. And I think it was quite a good balance for me. I'm a big fan of the way he's heading. I'm going to take a slight diversion here because me and Murph were talking about this off air, but Nyone had another blinding game for the Dragons, and there are some seriously good footballing options here at centre for Wales. Yeah, he picked up man of the match even though the Dragons lost, and he looked so composed. It was just a great option of knowing when to run, knowing when to pass, knowing when to kick. It was a real good, solid footballing performance. So there are some very, very good options, which I'm sure we'll come on to throughout the show. Who else stood out for you? I thought of you as I was watching the game, Dan, because I know it's your favourite thing to look and say who stood out for you. Who were the other players who caught your eye?
Yeah, I thought Corey Hill hit some fantastic lines, as he always does. And I actually thought of you when I saw him, because it's difficult to see him in a blue shirt, isn't he? You just think, hang on, it's the Dragons. But then, no, it isn't.
I've said it before, Dan, and it's made even worse this week by the announcement of the worst kept secret that Matthew Screech is going to be joining him there. That it is like watching, your girlfriend go back to her ex. And then with Matthew Screech doing the same, it's like you've dated her sister and she's done the same thing.
Yeah. Is that why you don't watch Cardiff anymore?
No, I did. I watched both games. I just watched them, weeping.
No, okay. But I thought that Dane Blacker, obviously, when he came on, he's been impressive, actually, I think, over the last few weeks, really. To use my phrase of him up in the tempo, he really does, doesn't he? And he's got a canny knack of getting on the end of a pass and going over. And he looks a good, good option, him. It was pleasing to see the Scarlets sort of keep going. But I think from the Blues perspective, Dai Young mentioned it, didn't he? That those are the sorts of games that, not so long ago they'd be losing. They quite often build a bit of a lead, look impressive, and then just lose the games in the last.
See the London Irish game. That's the prime example. And I thought they were going to do it again. The moment when I can only think that Lloyd Williams might have slightly overrun, and that's why Jared Evans didn't give it to him, because that should have been game, set and match there. It was a brilliant break by Jared, and there's just those opportunities you've got to finish. But fair play to them. They went behind, won a penalty, and he slotted a good kick to do it. What's your take on this one, Murph? You've been sat there waiting patiently.
You know me, I don't like to interrupt. I still can't work out if the early part of the game, first half basically, I can't work out if that was Cardiff playing really well or the Scarlets continuing their poor form. And then second half, it just seemed like, obviously, Kinnelly pulled themselves together, but it just seemed like Cardiff got really sloppy. Hallamay must have slicing kicks into touch on the fall and different things with, like the old double negatives they talk about a lot in commenting, punditry and what have you. And Yeah, in the end, they were probably lucky to hold on because they were behind. And if it hadn't been for that penalty later on, you know, they would have thrown away, what were they, 26-9 up, 17 points up. So, yeah, it's a game, an entertaining game, but a game I found difficult to, like, to read because of the way the first half went. It looked like Cardiff should have gone and scored 30, 40 points. But
these are hard to read because the I mean, I know... You know, the physicality is out there, but the intensity in terms of, you know, the real squeaky bum time when you get into a game, you know, because again, with the London Irish game, we know that was a European, albeit Challenge Cup game. That was a knockout rugby game, and they didn't get over the line in that occasion. Whereas this game, had they gone on to lose it, yes, it'd have been frustrating, and they'd have probably had a hard week training. But ultimately, it's a glorified pre-season friendly, isn't it? So that's why I find these games quite hard to judge. Are you the same?
Yeah, I suppose. I didn't think of it in that light, but there was some. I mean, there was that aside. There was still some good pieces of play. I thought, you know, the starting opposing nines was top quality in Thomas and I'm going to forget the name, Kieran Hardy. You know, and then obviously quality coming off the bench as well. So. Everything on the pitch, I thought, was quite good. Jonathan Davies is starting to look better. He's playing 13 today, although, you know, he's not fully back to himself, I don't think. But he's starting to look more commanding, as you'd expect from someone like him. And amazing to see Aaron Shingler string some matches together and switching matches like you did earlier. Amazing to see Ollie Griffiths on the pitch, just a matter of how long he's on the pitch. So I like a whole back row actually for the Dragons yesterday. There's a real balance to it with Wainwright on the blind side, Ollie Griffiths open side, and then Dan Baker at eight. So it was lots to get. I thought there was lots to get you sink your teeth into this weekend.
The player who stood out for me in that first 40 for Cardiff was Thomas Williams. I thought obviously, you know, he had a kick charge down in the first minute of the game, but other than that, I thought, again, to steal Dan's phrase, adding the tempo, it was just zip, 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 ball away from the ruck really easy, looking up, spotting when the gaps were there in front of him, but good service too. There was lots to like from him, I think. And again, I get the feeling if there is an injury to a nine on the Lions tour, he'll be the man who gets the nod.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you know, they're still beating the drum for Danny Kerr, but he wouldn't even be my first choice English replacement. I'd have Dan Robson. So, you know, there was some clips of him, because of the amount of attention that's been on him, some clips of him on BT Sport where he'd been put through a gap where I think any of the nines in the run of the Lions would have finished it, but he had to put the brakes on and look for the winger because he didn't have the pace to finish it off. So,
could be the other Welsh nine on the park. Might,
they
could get a call.
Look, again, you know,
he's another one where I just think people outside of this country know nothing about him, though.
Yeah,
they don't know much about Thomas. I mean, they've seen him at the World Cup as backup, yeah. Gareth Davis, but Kieran is at 2 6 Nations games, should we say, something like that? So,
yeah,
it would be, you know, even if it was the right caller, even if he was, you know, genuinely the best option, it would be a tough, tough job to explain it to the other three nations.
He doesn't care though, Gats, does he? He literally doesn't care. He you know, he'll take it on the chin. Once you've left out O'Driscoll for that test, nothing will top that 2013 decision. You know, nothing's ever going to be as hard to do or as hard to explain to a bunch of journalists who seemingly didn't want to remain neutral on it. So it was, I think, once you
definitely didn't want to remain neutral.
Well, yeah, not all of them, of course, but there was large chunks. And to say journalists, it was more pundits and people like Keith.
Ex-players.
Keith Wood still banging on about it, I think. I think that's why they've had to drop in from the BBC, because he won't shut up about it. But
I probably have John Cooney in my list as well as onside Thomas.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout.
It's so open though, isn't it, this one? Replacement nine.
Well, Dan, I'm glad you asked us about replacements. This is, in fact, I'm not even sure you did, but we did have a question.
You brought it up.
No, I was trying to give a bit of credit, but we had this question in from Will, which says, here's a question: in each position, who would be called up for the Lions in the event of injuries? So we're going to tackle this now, and seeing as you're being cheeky, Murph, you can start with Lucid Prop.
Well, Ellis Genge, it's nothing to think about, really. I mean, he was in our original selection, wasn't he? So was he? No, he wasn't. We went Kean Healy, but I think
you were close. We were close with Genge, right?
Yeah, we could. Yeah, we just went for experience in the end, didn't we? But
yeah,
I haven't seen since we picked our squad, and then since the official squad was picked, I haven't seen Kean Healy on a pitch. Not that he probably has played; it's just been in those Rainbow Cup matches. So, but I have seen lots of Ellis Genge. So, and that's that in a nutshell is how people pick their squads, is who they see week by week. So, yeah, but I go Ellis just because if we're going to be playing open rugby, he's the guy for me.
I think that's a fair shout. What about hooker then, Dan? Who's your choice here?
Yeah, hooker's a difficult one, isn't it, really?
I can see the cogs turning in your head.
Yeah, it is.
Try and think of a hooker.
Turner. Turning there.
Yeah, I like Turner.
Let's have a think. What would the options be then? So Turner, well, Scots have got three other
hookers. Good form since the Six Nations. He didn't play that well in the Six Nations, but he's been good for his club since. And then it's whoever's fit up in Scotland, because they've got loads of hookers who are.
Yeah, they've got three, haven't they?
They do, unless you look at, I think, at the
McAnally.
At the Irish options, I think Kelleher's the more, you know, he's the one who's potentially got a bit more X factor when he's, you know, when he's fit and fully firing. But yeah, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with Turner. I thought he equipped himself really well in the Six Nations.
Yeah, I quite liked him. Quite liked the look of him.
This proves a point though, because I've got no idea whether he's fit or not, because I haven't seen Edinburgh or Glasgow play. So, you know, I haven't seen either of those games. But you know,
I know Glasgow won this weekend, didn't they?
They did, yeah. I briefly saw that on the at the end of the Dragons game. All right, tight head prop. This probably shouldn't be too difficult. I think it's safe to say Kyle Sinclair would get the nod there, right?
Tom Francis, surely.
Can you imagine?
Sorry, Jed's lost it on there. Are you gone, are you?
No, look, I'm a big fan of Tom Francis. I think he's vastly improved. I just think, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I still think Sinclair was unlucky, and I still think he'll end up out there at some point, to be honest.
Yeah, I think he's gonna go out there, isn't he?
All right,
really.
Lock. I mean, there's always loads of injuries, but it has to be a tight head. He's not gonna go covering anywhere else other than that position. So there is an average number of injuries they have per tour. But this is a shorter tour than normal. It's only 8 games, so
yeah,
that might be less injuries. And
it's true, but I also wonder whether
front row might be okay.
There might be some because of the trying conditions. Again, you wonder whether they're, you know, like we've seen with the cricket players, you know, players flying home and coming back from the IPL or the Big Bash League and stuff like that. So. I don't know. It's a very, very different. It's a very, very different setup. So I think I don't know. But I'd love to know what that injury statistic is. What about locks then? Any locks who stand out for you, Dan?
I think that Adam Beard is. I thought there was an outside chance he might have got selected. So a little thing. Obviously, you got. James Ryan, wouldn't he?
I think Ryan would probably be
the obvious one,
wouldn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, yeah. we'd be taking Johnny Gray, because otherwise Murph would
Gray. Yeah. Yeah, Gray. There's some good second rows. Isn't there,
I was getting ready to, if neither of you mentioned Johnny Gray, I was getting ready to storm off in like a teenage huff.
I was hoping you'd be jumping in the car and bombing it down the M4 to give one of us a battering, but still doing the pod while doing it. I think realistically, you probably only need to, you know, if there were an injury in the second row, because there's so many in the squad, you know, I think realistically, even if you had two second rows get injured, you'd probably only call one up, because there's so many of them in there. But
yeah, and the way the trend has gone in the selection of second rows for this squad, it to me suggests they'd be more likely to go with James Ryan because they've gone for a lot of line out specialists, second rows. So that would push James Ryan further up the pecking order than Johnny Gray, even though that's obviously completely wrong.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Ryan's probably first there, isn't he? Because he's out and out line out, and then the others are probably slightly better in the open field, aren't they?
All right. What about in the back row then? If we get, are we doing this as three back rowers, or should we probably just pick? I reckon let's do a flanker and a number eight option. Let's start with a flanker. If there's an injury to an out and out six or seven, who goes?
Well, look, Josh's shoulder is much worse than we've been led to believe by his agent or whoever announced that he was going to be fit for the tour.
Murph's got a source on this, so it's on good authority.
Yeah, he apparently when the tour was announced, his shoulder was at a stage where he couldn't even do a press up with it. So that I mean,
mine's been like that for 15 years, but
but you know, I'd like to think he'd have been selected otherwise, but maybe he wouldn't have. And the fact that he's got a lot of conditioning to make up in a short space of time probably means he's not even on the first reserve list, I wouldn't imagine. Unless some injuries do come like that, do come back quick, but especially when you're strong as Justin Reedy.
He surely would have got picked. Surely, Murphy, he was on the plane otherwise. Surely.
I hope so. I mean, I wouldn't put Jack Conan in the same bracket as him myself.
The thing is, if the squad was being selected by anyone else, you know, if it was being selected by Clive Woodward, right, you'd say, right, well, maybe just, you know, Josh Navidi isn't rated, but we know how much Gatland rates him. He's made, you know, he has made a, ever since he got that first opportunity in a Wales jersey, he's not, whenever he's been fit, he's been selected, really. He's been in either at six or seven or even at eight. So I don't think there's any doubt that if he was properly fit, he'd be in that squad. So, you know, but I think that probably rules him out because I've been saying for a long time, I think he'll get out there. But when you told me that, I've changed my mind on it, really.
Say if it was the second half of the tour, then he's had an extra 4 weeks and maybe they'd look at him then. But then how many minutes on the pitch will he have had before they chuck him on the plane? So it's really tricky. And in fact, the more we rule out Josh Navidi, I'm more hard pushed to think who would actually go.
What about Underhill?
I was going to say Underhill.
Of course, yeah. Well, I mean, there's loads knocking around, but I don't know which one would actually be first choice, you know? Because, you know, Jack Conan came, you know, we mentioned Caelan Doris more than we mentioned Jack Conan. And then there's Richie up in Scotland. You know, there's lots of tidy back rows knocking around in the Gallagher Premiership. So, I honestly couldn't confidently say who I think they would go for.
It kind of depends on who does get injured, doesn't it? Like what type of back rower gets injured, really. As to who steps in. Because they're each... You know, Richie's different, isn't he, to Underhill?
He is, but they're both combative 6/7s, aren't they? I would say so. For me, it'd be either one of those, and I'd have no problem with either. You know, if it, I think,
yeah, I'd be fine with both of them.
You can get Underhill back to close to his best form. He is a real. He would be a massive asset out there. It's just he's been injured and he's struggled to get to that position, and with Richie. Again, I think it's difficult because he is excellent for Scotland. He's really niggly. I think he'd love playing in South Africa. So he's got a good shot. Is Richie at his best better than Underhill at his best? I don't think he is, but I wouldn't have a problem with either out there.
Mm. Yeah, agreed.
In light of how many shocks there were in the original squad was selected, you could like make an argument for some of the out of favour Welsh players like Aaron Wainwright, Ross Moriarty, the Josh van der Fleers types. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's a really open one, I think that is.
What about at number eight? Any thoughts there, fellas? Let's start with you, Dan.
Well, I think Billy, you know, Billy Vunipola's got to be.
I don't think there's any chance of him going, even if there's an injury to Toby. I think really? I think there's more to this. Yeah, because going back, I can't remember which other podcast it was that mentioned it, but after the 2017 tour, he came out and said that if Eddie Jones was coaching that side, they'd have won 3-0. And
of course,
I can't help but think, you know, because I've completely forgotten that. I can't help but think that. That's not gonna hold him in good sway. And if you've not picked him on form now, if he scores 5 tries against Ampt Hill, is that really going to be enough to get him the nod, even with an injury? I'd suggest no.
So who is it then?
I'm just thinking of the options, though. You know, it's if he doesn't go, who goes at 8 then? Because we're not Moriarty.
I think it would be a big step for Moriarty, having not played international rugby. As much as he's playing very, very well for the Dragons, I think he's probably off the radar at the moment. But then, yeah, you know, what options do you realistically look at?
I'll tell you, it would be a nice big additional slap in the face for Eddie.
Cool.
Dom Brandt.
Imagine.
And by the way, I would have him. I don't think it would happen, but I wouldn't complain if he ended up as a reserve.
He's a quality,
seeing him over there on the pitches would be great, wouldn't it?
He's rapid for his size, that guy. So
yeah.
Otherwise, you're going up to Scotland looking at their number 8s.
I think that would be hugely unlikely. I can't remember the fella's name.
Ferguson.
There is Ferguson, but there was another guy who played there against France in there, and I can't remember his name.
Great name.
I remember who he is.
Yeah. He's got a good name on him as well.
Which again leads you then to Ireland, and you know, presumably if Stander was in consideration, I just don't think he is in consideration. Like we've said before, I think he has essentially retired from international rugby, including the Lions. But the Lions does strange things to people, doesn't it? You know, you have these strange and random call-ups of people coming out of retirement and things like that. And probably less.
It might be for him the length of it as well. Like if he, you know, obviously his family needed him around. If he gets a call up halfway, they give him a call, will you come out? It's halfway through. He might think, yeah, look, I could do half. I couldn't do the full. So.
And again, they might already be over there.
They might, yeah. I don't know whether it's settled in Ireland or they're back in South Africa. So, you know, I think there's more chance of CJ Stander getting called up in an injury than there is Billy.
You know, I completely forgotten about that.
I had
those comments as well. I don't know how we forgot that between everyone, but that's pretty interesting. Yeah, that's something that you would not forget, would you?
You can't have that kind of...
As a coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think
you can't have that
kind of negativity knocking around the camp, wouldn't you? And yeah, it's, I don't know. I think Gatland, obviously, even in a normal tour, which is incredibly demanding, I think he puts a large emphasis on character. And I don't think that, I'm not saying that Billy has a bad character or anything like that, but I think if you've got previous with criticising a coach straight away afterwards, that's going to be difficult for Gatland to get over, I'd say.
You get the impression as well with Gatland, that's, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's more apparent with him than other coaches. It's probably exactly the same, to be honest, as it would do with if any of us were coaching. If someone came out with something that you really, really dislike, you're going to, the marker's down, isn't it? But you've heard of things like that before with Gatland, haven't you? If you go against him, that is it. It's curtains forever. So
it is. Right, well, let's go and have a look at the backs, and we're going to do that and see who would be the players who we'd call up in the event of any injuries. But we're going to do that after this very, very, very quick break.
Fridge run, boys, or?
We're on to scrum half, which is where this whole debate started. Dan, have you found an answer in the intervening 15 minutes?
I have, yeah.
Go on.
For me, it's Kieran Hardy.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a little out there.
I think he's way down the list on Gatland's radar. I think.
Would you like to see it though?
I'd much prefer Thomas, personally. I don't know if it's just that I think Kieran Hardy's really neat and tidy. His service is good. You know, kicking game's good, and he does as you say up the tempo. But I just think Thomas has got that bit of X factor that. You know, he's a real live wire. You know, when he first burst on the scene, I said it before, he's one of those old-fashioned scrum halves that, like, if the ball pops out loose at the back of a scrum, he's excited by it because it means actually there's an opportunity with a defence in front of them that's a bit more broken than it was before. And I just love that attacking threat that he brings. So it'd be for me, I like Murph's suggestion of Cooney as well. It'd be between those two for me.
Yeah, I don't think it will be Kieran Hardy, but I do think there's so much more to come from him if he can get some games. Obviously, his injury was not great, but I'm really looking forward to seeing him anyway develop over the next year. Basically, this is going to be too soon, and I think Thomas will be ahead of him. But I'd like to see it.
Murph, what are your thoughts?
Well, realistically, he didn't play much under Gatland, did he? So I think no. He was like a peripheral squad type of figure.
I don't even know that he made a squad, did he, under Gatland?
No, he wasn't in the World Cup squad. So you're right. Oh. But the best game I've seen him play was England in the Six Nations. So
yeah, I'd agree on that.
That's good form, you know, if you go with that. But it's an interesting one because we generally think it's either Thomas or Kieran, but again, outside of our little South Wales bubble, they're all screaming for Danny Kerr, obviously, which is just complete bullshit. But
he got a letter.
There are players around, you know. The Dan Robson had a great game last week, and John Cooney, and obviously there'll be some people out there screaming for Jameson Gibson Park. So it'd be interesting if. Anything did go wrong. There definitely will be injuries. It's just you don't necessarily know which position they'll be in. So that is an intriguing one, I think.
Well, what's arguably as intriguing is 10. What happens if there's an injury to Bigger or Russell? Dan?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Throw me that one.
Gareth Anscombe started kicking again this week, so that's a plus. Did you see that video?
I did.
I did, and it's obviously... It's good news.
Beautiful
for
strike.
Wales,
really,
yeah.
Really nice to see. Not something I was aware of. I know there's a lot of things you can't do if your knee is shot a bit, but kicking is not something that many people would think of. So this is, first time in 2.5 years, is it? Is that what we're saying? Or no, 2 years. It's
2 years?
Yeah.
It was a long time.
Yeah. It was August 2019. So yeah, nearly 2 years.
Yeah. I felt a bit nervous just watching him strike the ball. it's horrible. But so on 10, I think we've got to be looking in England for this. And there's a good few there, isn't there? There's a good few 10s,
there's one in particular that we're all thinking of.
Surname Smith, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. It's Smith. Smith, if there's an injury, I just don't know, again, if Sexton was not picked and then Bigger got injured and Gats wanted to call someone up and he wanted like a steady Eddie 10, he'd probably move Farrell there. He's not going to take Sexton to it. I just can't see it happening. So I think he takes another ball playing 10.
It depends on who gets injured, doesn't it? If
Ben Russell goes injured, then you probably would go Marcus Smith because
that's a gimme, isn't it? I think.
Yeah, I would say
And also, more importantly, it's another lovely slap in the face for Eddie. Suck that up, Ed. Lovely, Eddie wouldn't pick.
They are clocking. They are clocking up, aren't they? Imagine that. It's like with all
even Danny Kerr. Even Danny Kerr is a player he wouldn't pick. He dropped him 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, let's make a change then. Let's put him in at 9.
I can't see Gatland taking a 34-year-old scrum half though, no matter how much BT Sport are campaigning for it.
And the Five Live podcast as well.
Oh, I don't know.
I haven't listened to it since, but that one episode was relentless tub thumping for anyone who had a vague affiliation to Harlequins.
Gats would take Mike Phillips surely over Danny Kerr. He'd still do a job.
He would, right? I think it's Marcus Smith. Let's have a look at some centre options. This is quite interesting. What if there's an injury in the centre, Murph?
God knows. Don't know. No clue.
That's it. I imagine Gat's response would be the same as well. He's like, I don't know.
Nye Owen. I'm going, there you are. Proper bolter.
Oh, geez. No, that would be a bolter. Seconded, of course, because he's he's very much making up.
Aside from that, great first name. So
exactly.
got everything in his favour.
Dan, come on, mate. You must have a few thoughts. You've never paid any attention to forward play. You're always looking at the backs. Who are the centre options that you think are realistic and who might get the nod if there's an injury there?
Yeah, so Slade is got to be there or thereabouts, isn't he? If we head over to Ireland then?
Yeah, Ringrose.
Ringrose.
He had to be close, didn't he? I think we've mentioned it a couple of times, but North being injured through the centre selection right up in the air, didn't it?
But it buys more time for Tuilagi if he's keen.
Yeah.
Depending on how deep into the tour the injury occurs and what have you. So
could Tuilagi, Jonathan, could Jonathan get a call? Getting a bit more game time, isn't he? Probably unlikely, but so what have we got there? We've got
Ringrose, Slade, or possibly Tuilagi.
Possibly Tuilagi, Jonathan. Anyone else that we're
Cameron Redpath.
Yeah. I like him, Game depends
I'm
on
not
which,
sure. Yeah, I'm not, which I think centre, a little it? Way. Yeah, and also as well, I think looking at the centres that he's picked, obviously that the one that really stands out is Bundiaki in terms of the fact that he's going to want some physicality there. So yeah, you'd think that if there was enough time for Tuilagi to get those minutes under his belt, then he would have a half-decent shot. And again, it's not something that South Africa would want to see, even if he didn't get close to the test sides. South Africa would not be particularly happy if he gets called up and ends up out there. So it's an interesting one. I think it's probably more like, but again, like you say, Dan, if Elliot Daly gets injured, I know he's, we've said that he's being considered as a centre for this, you're much more likely to see Slade go. So yeah, it's tricky. Having said all that, it'll probably be Ringrose.
Yeah.
Right. Back three.
Well, Johnny May was, considered unlucky, but I didn't think he was unlucky at all. So depends. There's the cover for fullback with various players across the squad. So it would only be wing maybe they would replace. And who was the one who missed out? Johnny May, I suppose, and then Jacob Stockdale.
Who plays on the wing for Harlequins?
Yeah. Joe Marchant of late, a centre. I quite like Joe Marchant, actually.
He's a good player, isn't he?
He's another one who should be in contention or somewhere near, not necessarily in, but somewhere near the English squad. They've got enough depth there. And it's one of those, sometimes when there's an injury quite far into the tour, they don't bother to replace them.
Yeah.
That could be a position where that happens.
So there you have it. No replacement.
Dan, anyone? Think of 37. What do they need? Just stick Tipperick on the wing anyway. Tipperick sounds like Marvin.
Like we were saying before we came on air, South Africa have named a squad of, 47, 48, which will include the A side. But at the same time, it's a big, beefy old training camp. They're on home turf.
That's the talk anyway. And I mean, that means like half the Gallagher Premiership is going to be picked if they're taking 47. Most of Sale squad will be in. There's going to be a lot. That's a big squad. Can you imagine if Wales picked a 47-man squad? They'd be down to the academy boys in some clubs.
Well, yeah, they would. It's... Right, Dan, anyone in the back three you fancy as a bit of a
Cockersinger?
Really?
Who, sorry? Wow.
Why not?
Sorry, who did you say then?
His first name's Joe, isn't it?
Keep going, Dan.
Joe Cockasinga.
All right. Yeah, okay.
Any good, Miff? I'm just plucking names out of thin air.
Well, if you're going to pluck names out, I mean, you'd go Rocco Degoni. There's loads of wingers around, but...
You could have 10.
Ones that were actually, you know, Six Nations form. It's not that many, is it?
Let's give another tour to Keith Earls.
Do you know what? I mean, like, he's got some serious longevity on him, and he's, you know, I think he's done very well. I just don't think he's quick enough to play Test match for Lions, is he?
Not down there, no.
I would say he's
got a great try against the English this year.
It was a great
try. He's been in international rugby with some big breaks in between for about 14 years. There was a photo knocking around of Wales, in, you know, when they had the yellow kit, the horrible yellow kit.
Yeah, it was about 2008 or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Dan Bigger was in that.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he played against Canada. Was it Canada or someone in it?
Yeah, he wasn't first choice at that stage, but he was in the Welsh squad in 2008. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Alan Wynne was only first in the squad in 2007. So Dan Bigger's been in the squad for 1 year less, obviously nowhere near as many caps and not first choices often, but he's been in and around the squad for 13 years, which is mad.
It is, yeah. I have just thought of someone who, looking at that Irish contingent as well, I think if you go back 12 months, you'd have said Jacob Stockdale would have been out there. I wonder whether that's a realistic choice for someone to get called up, maybe. I think Mer's probably right. It's not going to be anyone, is it? Because they've probably got enough cover there because Daly can do a job at...
They probably have. There is a load of English wingers, though, isn't there? That could go. Murph, you could probably rattle them all off, but...
Yeah. Well, like I say, once they went up to 37, and then it depends how early in the tour. If it's... I mean, like we've already covered in previous weeks is... Normally, you lose a couple of the squad before they even get on the plane, before they even set off. So if anyone goes now, they will replace them. But if they're 3-4 games into the tour, maybe back three players, they won't bother. They have done that in the past. I think last tour, someone got injured in one position and they replaced them with someone from a different position altogether. So I can't remember who that was now. It was probably Tuilagi and they brought on a winger instead or something. But... There's so many possibilities.
The interesting one with the back one, I suppose, if they're going with that trend of wingers that can also play 15 or have a knowledge of, you know, across the whole back three, then you know, Stockdale's probably right up there, isn't he? Really?
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, there probably are plenty of options, but nothing that stands out massively. And we haven't got to wait too long. I think you're right, Murph. So, you know, something will happen before we get out there. There's still a lot of rugby to get played, including, you know, the business end of the English Premiership season. So, well,
you know, Bigger got his face smacked about the first 20 minutes after he'd been picked. I think Falata was down injured, but didn't go off on Friday night. So it's coming. It's going to happen to someone, just, you know. Just depends who it is.
I know, yeah, it is. Well, anyway, let's take a break from talking the Lions and let us have a chat now about the Dragons game against the Ospreys. So, again, I don't know where to begin with this one. Another frustrating one because they played such good stuff, the Dragons, but the Ospreys, you know, ended up getting out 40 point winners in that one. Murph, what did you make of what you saw in that game?
Yeah, I've only seen the first half. You interrupted me. I was watching, and I had to.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, yeah, I had to come on here. So, again, when you look at the Dragons squad, it's just hard to imagine that they can't eventually improve. If you know what I mean, like I mentioned the back row earlier. And you've got Will Rowlands coming into that team. Mm. And Jonah Holmes is playing really well. Scored 2 tries in the first half, I think.
He was honestly like I'm telling you, he's playing like Jonah Lomu. He's running through players. he set up a try in the second half for Rio Dyer as well, where he bust through, drew the defender in, and cat flap out the back. And it's just, I mean, he's an absolute joy to watch at the moment.
Yeah, he does, you know, all joking aside, he does look like he's stronger than when he arrived. He looks like he's...
Yeah, he's super powerful, isn't he?
Yeah.
The games I'd seen him play for Wales and the games I'd seen him play for Leicester, I thought, oh, this guy's he's quick, he's good under the high ball, he's a solid finisher, good, neat and tidy. But this ability to break tackles was not something I'd associated with him, and he just seems to do it virtually every time he gets it, and it's giving them such a good outlet at the moment. So he's been magnificent for him.
And like I say earlier, fingers crossed, Ollie Griffiths is just going to finish the rest of 2021 without an injury. That'd be nice.
Yeah, it would be. I tell you what, on a similar theme, Ellis Jenkins is not going to feature for the rest of the season because of another injury. Luckily, it's on the other leg this time. Which again, my heart sank when I read that. But I think you're bound to be extra precautionary with him, aren't you? And go back to Ollie Griffiths, he did get through the game today. Obviously, just the way he puts himself about, though, honestly, he's like a wild dog of a seven, and he's you can see why he gets injured because of the way he throws himself about. But he does some extra special things when he does get that chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's high when you got him facing up against Justin Tipperick in a game. That's that's high standard. Ospreys were fully loaded with a lot of the top boys like Tipperick and Alan Wynn, and Adam Beard wasn't there though. But
no, he wasn't. And I think like we said last year, they got more meat arriving in the second row as well, haven't they? Bradley Davis played and started the game. But yeah, I mean, to be fair, we should talk about the Ospreys because there's some good stuff in there as well. I thought Ruben Morgan Williams had a good game at nine. Dan Evans, despite getting bumped by Jonah Holmes for his try, had another good game. There was a lot in that game, a lot of players that you could look at and say, these are guys. Owen Watkin, again, I thought he particularly defensively made some crucial, I don't know what he does, when he dislodges the ball or he just gets his arm in an awkward position that seems to make an attacker cough ball up. That is really, really valuable stuff. And I'm sure
he's got that rip, isn't he, Jez?
He has got that rip, exactly. Yeah, which is as good as a turnover, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We had a guy when I was a kid at our club who used to do that a lot. We used to call him the Claw. I imagine he does it so often. He's probably got a nickname relating to the amount of turnovers he makes.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
It's a proper weapon.
It'd be nice to think there was a good nickname and he wasn't just like Watto or something. another frustrating one for the Dragons. Ospreys get the results. Here's one for you though, boys. Do you know who the only 100% record in the Northern Division of the Rainbow Cup is?
Is it Munster?
It's not Munster. Dan?
No, I don't. I'm not going to guess.
Benetton.
What?
Oh, yeah. Because isn't there talk of the game being played in Italy, the final being played in Italy, even if whoever gets it?
I hadn't heard that, actually. But, yeah, Benetton, the only undefeated side. The only one who won all
that's
their
great.
Is that because they've been playing Zebre every week?
They've beat one of the Scottish sides as well, I think, Glasgow, maybe, and then two against Zebre. But, again, they've only got two fixtures, though, haven't they? So if they pull something out of the bag, who knows? I mean, that would be hilarious if Benetton was
getting battered by the Stormers in the final.
there's not going to be an intercontinental final though, is there? Surely that's not going to happen.
I thought that was the idea, North versus South in the final.
Oh, I don't know. To be honest, again, this shows, I mean, A, it shows what I know, but also it shows the lack of interest in it. I thought this was just going to culminate in nothing, that you just have two winners, you'd have, but maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, yeah, if Benetton were to get to a final of any sorts, having, I think, like gone through the regular Pro 14 season without winning a game. This Pro 14 season that goes on forever. Can't wait for the next one to start. Right, let's turn our attentions to Wales though. Like we said, it's been actually quite a good opportunity to run the rule over some players ahead of I guess you call it a development tour, even though it's taking place over here. The fixtures have been confirmed. So Canada will be the first visitors, followed by two tests against Argentina. How do you play this one, Dan? Lots of experimentation. Are you calling up your experienced players to come in? What's your game plan if you're selecting for this for these fixtures?
I think you've got to have a bit of both, haven't you? You've got to have a bit of experience in there alongside a lot of youth and well, not necessarily youth, but uncapped players or players with a couple of caps. Because otherwise it just turns into a bit of a, you don't quite get the balance right. So it's got to, have a couple of old heads in there that they can keep everything steady.
Well, aside from anything else, Dan, I mean, Argentina are a serious opposition. So I don't think you can throw anything against them. They get spanked. So, I mean, assuming Argentina come with a strong squad, which I can't see why they wouldn't.
Well, exactly. Presumably because it's in a test window, isn't it? They'll have access to the players that they'd want. I imagine they'd want to get a run out, having essentially lost the Jaguares. And so, I don't know. It could be I think it could well be a strong side that comes over.
I think you'd have to if you're playing Argentina, and if Argentina are anywhere near full strength, you can't throw the kids in. It'd be lambs to the slaughter a little bit. So it'd be interesting to see when that squad's selected.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess that means that you've got the likes of, I don't know, your Nicky Smiths and players like that who've got plenty of test experience, have been to World Cups. And
Corey Hills,
yeah. I imagine it'd be, you'd have Corey Hill captain that side. Probably a bit like the tour in 2018. Do you remember that, where we went over there and played them in two tests?
So we're going fully. Yeah, that's all the top boys then, really. Well, what do you think?
I think, if you're facing Argentina in a test without your Lions, then you've got to look at Wainwright, Moriarty,
Halfpenny.
All the caps on show. If fit, Josh Navidi, depending when the dates are, people like that. So. But also sprinkled in with, obviously, you're going to be down to fourth choice wingers and different things in certain positions.
Just luckily, Jonah Holmes is around, so that takes care of one berth.
Yeah, well, I mean, he should be in this, based on current form, he should be in the Welsh squad now anyway.
Yeah, I think if there was an autumn internationals if there was a normal summer tour outside of Lions, he'd definitely be going on it. It's going to be a tricky one to get right. I think that, because again,
Davis is available now, and so you could put together a decent side.
I just wonder with John Fox though, if he's had, I don't know, he'd probably want to play because there's an outside chance of getting a Lions call, as we discussed earlier.
Yeah,
but again, you just feel like he's been through so much. He's been had to play through so much rugby, having had a really long layoff. Would he actually benefit from a bit of rest, and
the thing is, Jed, he's playing in these games now, though, isn't he? In the Rainbow Cup. So you think he's probably pushing it, isn't he? He's got his eye on something, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it is. I imagine if you asked him, he'd probably say he probably would want to play in them. I just don't know whether. I don't know whether it's the right thing to do or not, or this is the time to go, do you know what, Owen Watkin, you've got to step up and be a senior partner in the centres, and then you pick someone else alongside him to kind of see what they're capable of. But yeah, it's going to be really tricky to get right.
There's a lot of options at centre, aren't there? I mean, it was only a few years ago that we didn't have many centre options, do we? And now we've got a good few, across... across all the regions, to be fair.
Yeah, there are. It's looking a lot more promising. I can't remember whether we actually have we spoken about Nye Owen on the pod, or was that just me and you talking, Murph?
No, we did. I mentioned him earlier, didn't I?
All right, good. Well, I won't tread over that ground again. But he's a massive prospect that I think is going to be. The fact that he's only 20 years old as well. There's a lot more to come from him, I'd say. So, yeah, some interesting stuff and to see what we do in the pack as well. Any other business, fellas? Anything else caught your eye this week that you wanted to bring up? Or are you happy for us to wrap up and go and have to enjoy the rest of our Sunday evenings?
We haven't had any technical issues, so that's a disappointment.
We haven't yet. I tell you what, if you would like an update on that, what I didn't realise about this app is it only lets you record in 15-minute chunks. So I'm going to have to try and sew together four 15-minute chunks and make sure it lines up with the audio that you boys have come through. So, yeah, I'm glad there's a backup option.
Rather you than me. Yeah,
long evening ahead, Jez.
Possibly. Nothing will ever be as long as that evening where I tried to recover the Jamie Roberts interview that just the audio corrupted on it. I've never had any problems from that little handy recorder that we take out on the road with us. And
we did in the early days. Well, didn't we record a full pod, but we didn't record.
Did we?
And we went again.
I definitely did one of those with Yestin, where I ran again. I don't know what it was. The software just failed on me, or I pressed something wrong, and I just rang him back, and he went, "Yeah, cool, let's go again."
I'd love
give
to
me another this. Hour of his time. Yeah.
I would have told you to get stuffed.
Oh, you wouldn't, mate. he's a big softy, really, isn't he?
Yeah, correct.
Right, good stuff, fellas. Let's see if the editing proves as difficult as I'm anticipating it will be. But that's what I don't get paid for. But nonetheless, thank you for listening. Thank you to Murph. Thank you to Dan. Thanks to the people who sent questions in. As always, a thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want some great quality coffee, then you can do so by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. We'll be back to chat rugby with you next week.
Podcast Network.